America. On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. Thank you so very much for tuning in to one of our Thursday shows. Today we have a wonderful guest in studio. If you watched our show for many years, you've heard me interview him before. I'm so grateful he happened to be in Texas and able to join us today. We're having a show today, Frank Gaffney. He's in studio. I want to give a bit of an introduction of him. I've introduced him many times at public forums and speeches, and there's so much to say, you have to pick and choose. But I'll do the short circuit thing I've done many times. Frank Gaffney's been dedicated to America's national security for many, many years. As a very young man, he worked in the Reagan administration and worked on foreign policy, the Reagan administration was looking at the question of the Cold War and what in the world are we going to do? And so he's been thinking about national policy and just foreign policy, national security for decades. He formed an organization in Washington called the Center for Security Policy, and they collect the most just extremely prominent, knowledgeable, wise people in all sorts of avenues or aspects of national security. So he's brought together a group for decades that has provided insight on the most pressing issues facing America's future, America's security. They are very active in testifying before Congress, state legislatures, explaining issues. But the unique aspect I really enjoy about Frank Gaffney, I always want to give him credit for, when he observes a new issue, a new challenge occurring, he doesn't just observe it and write a white paper, which is a great thing to do, not a bad thing to do, but he actually thinks through, what is it we could do to solve this? How can we as a country come together? What resources can we pull in to address this problem directly, to help the American people understand it so they could get focused and concerned about it as well, to get government on track, to whether it's regulatory changes needed, legislation needed, just awareness among members of Congress. All of that is something he just does naturally. A quick story, I don't know how many years ago it was, but there began to be an issue. I should say, first of all, how I met him was a monthly discussion group I used to go to as a conservative lunch club once a month, and he was a speaker back when a long time ago, and he came in to talk about the threat of radical Islam and what the threat that really was to America, as we brought more and more Islamic refugees here, as we watched many Islamic terror attacks occurring. And he gave a stellar presentation. I'll leave out a lot of the details, except to say I talked to him afterwards just saying, wow, this was my first introduction to why it was these jihadist attacks were occurring. What was the reason behind these attacks? What's driving these people? And then what do we do about it? And so at that time, we talked after the luncheon, began to follow more of his work at Center for Security Policy. And over the years, my husband and I have become wonderful friends with Frank and his very beautiful wife, Marisol, he continues just as long as I've known him, just fighting for America's understanding about what foreign policy can affect America's future. So today, he's in studio. I have a list of many, many questions, but I want to really focus on today to start with his new concern and really the concern all Americans should have about America surrendering our sovereignty to the World Health Organization. So with that long introduction, please help me welcome to the show Frank Gaffney.
Thank you, Debbie.
Good to see you, sir.
Most heartfelt and most appreciative.
Oh, I appreciate you right back. You know, one thing I meant to say, in Dallas, my husband and I, we moved up to whatever you call it right now. We moved up to North County, but we used to live in Dallas, and we'd have many events in our home, and we'd have Frank come and speak and talk about an issue. We had just a room full of patriots. Our little venue or speaking venue held 40 people, it was our tavern. And so anyway, we did many issues. And that was one of the things I often thought after you finished speaking is, you're the scary, I always said this to you, the scariest good speaker we know. So, because you understand a lot, and you don't just study it academically, you figure out how do we solve it. So you've been focused recently. I want to run through, if I hope we can get to, the World Health Organization and the Sovereignty Coalition, the UN and Israel, simply flaming outrageous. I want to ask you about the cargo ship and collapsing in the Key Bridge and all that. And then the stop vaccine passports. And if we get to it, the central bank digital currency threat. So with that, I'm going to stop talking and turn to you. If you would, tell us, I know people know the basic argument or the basic concern is that we Americans are looking at a ceding of our sovereignty to the World Health Organization over pandemic policy, but it's much bigger than that. So take it away, tell us what the concern is and what you're trying to do about it.
Thank you, and thank you for making this topic A, because it deserves to be. In 60 days, the United States will give to an unelected, unaccountable, Marxist bureaucrat who, thanks to the Chinese Communist Party, runs the World Health Organization, a fellow by the name of Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. Unprecedented power, I believe, in the history of the world. He will be solely responsible for deciding when any nation in the world has what he considers to be, quote, a public health emergency of international concern. Now, top of mind, obviously, in that connection would be pandemics. Well, interestingly enough, he was personally responsible for advising that the world embrace what he and others called the China model in connection with the recent unpleasantness of the COVID-19 pandemic, the biological warfare unleashed against us by the Chinese Communist Party. And on the basis of that experience, one would think you probably would not entrust anything to this guy, let alone the authority, as I say, to not only declare when something constitutes this kind of emergency, but what must be done about it. When you think about it, in the history of the world, I honestly think nobody has ever had that kind of authority. Certainly nobody has even gotten close to it without using military force to acquire that kind of power. And tragically, by virtue of the kind of open-ended nature of this public health emergency business, he can basically say anything qualifies. And actually, he already has said things like, oh, climate change, and poverty, and instability, and I think reproductive rights, and migration, and transgender equality, and gun violence, all constitute public health emergencies of international concern. And if you pause for even a moment to think about what kinds of things he would recommend be done about those problems, they're totally contrary to the Constitution of the United States and to our freedoms and to, among other things, your individual freedom to have medical counsel, advice, and the treatment that your personal physician thinks is warranted. And why is that so important? Because according to a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Robert Malone, 80% of the 1.2 million Americans who perished as a result of that biological warfare attack by Tedros's friends in Beijing died needlessly because the medical advice they were given pursuant to his recommendations was terrible. And it's almost unimaginable that on the basis of all that, one would think, well, let's give this guy more authority to make not just counsel and recommendations and advice, but dictates about how we will deal with these kinds of problems in the future. So the giveaway on all of this, to conclude, is that they call what they're about, specifically the Chinese communists, but others as well, the folks in the World Economic Forum, the European Union, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and of course, not least the Biden administration. They're pursuing global governance. And that's kind of a clue, because global governance turns out not to be the same thing as limited, representative, accountable, constitutional government in this country. And I think what we desperately need to do in the next 60 days is precisely what we're doing right now, which is to tell people what is going on. And I think once Americans find out, they're not going to want any part of it. At least I pray that's the case.
That was a great summary, and I have, as you might imagine, a bunch of follow-up questions. Very quickly, I want to remind people, the gentleman who you're referring to, who heads up World Health Organization, and I think they just say Dr. Tedros, correct? He's not a medical doctor.
Correct.
He's a former ballpark of terrorists, a guerrilla terrorist. Isn't this correct? Yes.
He was very much part of a terrorist regime in Ethiopia. And I think the principal job qualification as far as the Chinese Communist Party was concerned is he is a Marxist.
So a Marxist guy with no medical training is heading up the World Health Organization, and America is way down the path. I mean, the final decision is the last weekend of May, I think, correct?
The plan is to approve not one, but two different agreements. I think it's a kind of belt and suspender approach. They're going to get those powers entrusted to this guy one way or the other, if they can.
I want to talk first about the scope of what that would involve, and then I want to go back to who in our government beside who in Washington, beside Frank Gaffney and the Center for Security Policy, is alert to this and who's trying to stop it. That'll be the rest of the show, but I want to just first talk about...
No, it's actually a short answer, unfortunately.
But, you know, because there's no one standing up.
There are
a handful
of people. No, well, look, it is where we should go. You know, I was in a meeting the other day with Congressman Bob Good. He's one of the best guys we've got in the Congress. He's the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. And he described what this is as arguably the most important national policy issue that nobody knows anything about. And that's certainly true in the United States Congress. There, you can count them on maybe one hand, people who have actually paid attention to this and have expressed concern.
But that's slightly better if they just don't know. The worst thing would be if Republicans especially, because I can't ever figure where the Democrats are going to go, but Republicans, it's a better answer that they don't know. It'd be worse if they do know and they're fine with it. Because part of what should be occurring in Washington is the Senate should be saying, we're not making any deal of this kind with the World Health Organization until it goes through the constitutionally required process in the Senate to confirm or not a deal.
A treaty. There are a lot of different pieces to this. These are treaties. Both of these are treaties. They will be legally binding. They will transform our constitutional form of government. And they will empower people who have made it clear it is their purpose to destroy us. You'd think that would rise to the level of something that people in the United States Senate would think they ought to advise and consent to.
Is anybody in the Senate on board with opposing?
Senator Ron Johnson has been singularly impressive on this. And there are a few others that will kind of, make the right noises. Mike Lee and I think Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. But in terms of people who've actually taken point on this, Ron Johnson has done it. And let me just share with you an example both of what he did and the nature of the problem. I think it was about a year ago now, he went to the floor of the United States Senate and offered an amendment saying, whatever these guys cook up has to come to the Senate for its constitutional quality control. I mean, that's the framers realized. I mean, these guys were so brilliant. Yeah. They realized that the whole enterprise, all of their checks and balances and limited government and, you know, the responsibility of the federal government being particularly limited and the states having all the rest of the powers, all of that could be thrown out the window. by an international agreement. I mean, the idea that they would think a president of the United States might actually be interested in doing that exercises incredible foresight. He offered this amendment, and by a vote of 47-49, it failed.
So the Republicans were nearly all on board?
All but one. And the one was Todd Young, who for procedural reasons, you know, was managing a bill and he didn't want to have a poison pill in the bill.
But you couldn't, they couldn't find one Democrat then?
Not one Democrat at the time. I think, and if I can just cut to the chase,
sure,
on
please
this. I had a fascinating conversation with an old friend of mine, and I think of yours too, Debbie. And I mean old literally as well as many years.
Yeah.
Richard Viguerie.
Oh.
And that may not be a name familiar to everybody here, but he's been one of the iconic figures in the conservative movement for decades. And we had a conversation the other night, and I asked him about the last time that the United States government formally, publicly surrendered its sovereignty. And I think the last time was about 50 years ago. And he was in the middle of it. It was the fight over the Panama Canal.
Oh, okay.
And the surrender of that canal became such a focal point for American patriots who said, this will not end well. And how right they were. Talk about prescience. I mean, we now have a canal that is under the control of the Chinese Communist Party.
Yes, yep.
But Richard said, you know, three things came out of that fight, which was tooth and tongue. In the end, it passed by a single vote in the United States Senate. He said, first, the modern conservative movement was really born of that honing fire. Secondly, we got a national leader of that movement, a guy I had the privilege subsequently of working for, Ronald Reagan. And third, and this is really important, the power that was essentially garnered in the course of that fight for the, you know, minds and souls of the American people over our sovereignty was translated in the subsequent two election cycles into the removal from office of fully 20 members of the United States Senate. So I'm prayerful that now we will have Panama Canal Treaty 2.0. We need that kind of fight because, frankly, more is at stake than was the case then. This will touch every single one of our lives because, again, as I said, if you think about it, the idea that Dr. Tedros is going to be your next doctor is a pretty chilling thing, especially when he's killed off as many of us as he has. And I don't want to exaggerate that. I hold him personally responsible for promoting the China model of, you know, mask mandates, social distancing, quarantines, lockdowns, jabs with inadequately tested vaccines that turned out to have been more dangerous than the disease.
Yeah.
All of that was something that he helped engineer, and he just had advisory authority at the time. Imagine if he's got, as a result of these kinds of agreements, not one but two, compulsory authority. How many will they kill off in this next environment? And just to give you one example, Debbie, and I could go on.
No,
and
you're
I am going on. But just to give you, there are three things. In addition to this unbelievable surrender of power to a fellow of such dubious quality. And as you say, Deb, it's not like he knows anything about medicine more than we do, for example. But there are three things that are baked into these agreements. One is that every man, woman, and child will be given a digital ID. Now, that digital ID bears a strong resemblance to what you want to have if you are trying to impose, well, something like the Chinese social credit system. We call it a digital gulag in our sovereignty coalition, and it will be used to control us in every respect. And we touch on central bank digital currencies in that connection, maybe in due course. Secondly, there is going to be, you may have seen this, there was a consideration in the Supreme Court the other day of the idea of having the U.S. government censoring people. Did you catch this? Well, under these agreements, the United States and all other member nations will be obliged to create their own censorship mechanisms going forward. So if you didn't think that was a good idea, you're about to be the victims of it being imposed upon you. And thirdly, and this goes back to the point about what's the larger agenda here? One of our colleagues is Dr. Meryl Nass. I don't know if you've had her on the show or not, but she's one of the frontline doctors, a really courageous and very smart woman, who has lost her license because she was prescribing, despite what Tedros was saying, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine because her patients were coming to her and saying, please don't make me go to the hospital. Allow me to live. And she did, and they've taken away her license as a result. But she's a specialist, by among other things, on biological warfare. And she said, you know, there's a mechanism that's being created in this two-treaty exercise that will establish that if any member nation has discovered that there's a novel pathogen, as they call it, a deadly virus, they have to bring it to, with, you know, do the genetic code on it and then bring it to this central repository so that it can be shared with all member nations, as well as the World Health Organization. She said, this is a formula for the proliferation of biological weaponry.
Yeah.
And then she said, and I think she's exactly right, it's a formula for depopulation. And when you think about Bill Gates being the largest single donor, and he does it through a number of different mechanisms, the largest single donor to the World Health Organization. And have you noticed that he's rather big on depopulation? Well, a lot of this starts making sense in the worst meaning of the word. They're out to kill us. And we're not going to have any say in whether we do something about it or not, unless the American people now rise up and reject this with every bit as much, in fact, more effect than they did the Panama Canal Treaty.
I'm going to go back to a whole bunch of these things, and we'll go back to the Senate later, but the content is essentially two different treaties, and the content would get around to what you're talking about, a digital ID for everybody. And on that subject, what is the defender of these things? What is their argument why that's necessary? Is it just to keep, I mean, because I did read recently that about how some of the vaccines are being pushed will actually have something in them so that it can, when you ingest it, it contains things to report back, yes, indeed, you know, Frank took the shot, Debbie took the pill, whatever it was, it reports back. So it is kind of, is it monitoring your compliance with mandated or requested jabs and such. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know whether it's correct or not. What I think is certain is that's the aspiration of people like Bill Gates, is that you will have inside these gene therapies, as they're called, some means of tracking and reporting back. Whether they've gotten that far yet or not, I don't know. But I think the point is, it's about control, that's for sure. And so whether it's just your insurance company or your doctor who is going to be required to set a code in your file, which will be electronically transmitted to the World Health Organization, and oh, by the way, the Chinese Communist Party, about the status of your health. That's the idea. They need to monitor all of us, you see, because that's the way you're able to discern when there is some pandemic or other health emergency developing. And then because Tedros's authority will extend not just to actual public health emergencies of international concern, but also potential ones, you have the opportunity to get in front of this, you see. So that's all, you know, perfectly logical, except it happens to do a lot more with, I think, control and destruction than it does preservation of life and, you know, prosperity.
Yeah. You know, when you describe this kind of, you did a great job summarizing what is in the two treaties and we're 60 days or so away from just giving it to the World Health Organization. I think part of what happens, and you talk about people in Congress not concerned or don't understand it, it seems to me that the majority, maybe even of all politicians, not just the conservative side, would be saying, we're not giving away our sovereignty. I think they don't grasp the giving away of sovereignty. They think it's just another treaty, and they think, oh, this is the right wing complaining again, you know, exaggerating the content. But why wouldn't there be more? I mean, in light of all we have uncovered about China and China controlling this administration, and in fact, our good friend Sam Faddis refers to President Biden as, in his view, a controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, a former CIA, you know, mega knowledgeable guy says that's who Biden is. And yet America watches, Congress watches, Republicans watch. We're going to give authority to the World Health Organization, controlled by the CCP, run by a guy who's a not medical doctor. Why isn't there more uprising within Republicans in Washington? I can't understand the weak response or the failure to respond. That is an impossible question, but what is wrong with them?
No, it's a perfectly apt question and one that needs to be remedied. And that's why we're talking about this. I have been badgering people relentlessly about this for about a year. We founded this Sovereignty Coalition, Reggie Littlejohn and I, wonderful comrade in arms and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
She runs Women's Rights Without Frontier, you know her well. And we just realized that we had to try to awaken people to what was going on. It's a combination of things. Partly it's the fact that they are keeping this in an absolute black box. I say it's the Pelosi rule. They're not going to let us know what's in this, either of these accords, until they pass it. But beyond that, Debbie, there is, as you may have noticed, an awful lot of other things that are going wrong as a result of, I think, some of the same things you've just mentioned and Sam Faddis has correctly characterized.
Yeah.
So it's just system overload, and that's by design. You know, people
right.
say it's a 300-front war.
Cloward pivot, the entire country is in chaos.
And
so okay. So back to what, I just want people to grasp what would change about your life if this were to go through as it is. And I want to hit why the Senate, by the way, I'm back to quickly on the Senate. I believe the Constitution says the Senate is 2/3 would have to pass a treaty, would have to approve a treaty. Mm-hmm. But the decision to get it characterized as a treaty and brought up for a vote, that was shot down by this 49-47 vote, even though in the effort to get it in, because it seems like that'd be part of what Republicans could do, especially if they get a majority this fall, even though I know that will be in place, is to say, actually, we're reexamining this, we're calling it a treaty, and we're condemning it. I hate the feeling we're just lost hope, because if you, basically every Republican except one voted no, it wouldn't have passed. It wouldn't have passed the
Absolutely
Senate.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Look, let me just make a point on this. I am as hopeful about this as I've been about any of the bad things that are going on.
Wow.
And it's not because I think we can vote it down in some fashion before this May event. In fact, a week or so ago, the House of Representatives receded to the Senate and struck language in the Foreign Operations Appropriations Bill that said there will be no funding for the World Health Organization, and the Senate must, before they get any more funding, be in an advise and consent mode on these agreements. That went over the side, as have all of the policy riders and other things that the House has done to date, because the Senate will not have any part of it. Look, Debbie, I'm hopeful because I am confident that if we do our job, this thing cannot stand the light of day. If everybody in this audience and viewing at home is willing to do just one thing, go to sovereigntycoalition.org. There is a declaration, we call it the American Sovereignty Declaration there, and with a further click of a mouse, you can go to an Align Act campaign that will take you directly to your representatives in the Congress. And if people across this country will do nothing more than that, it will start becoming a problem for people who, for at least the next 6 or 8 months, have to be profoundly interested in what you think. And I've said it on this platform before. Not so much the rest of the time, but between now and the election, they're very, very interested.
Yeah.
So take advantage of that. Hold them accountable. Honestly, everybody standing for elective office, not just your federal folks, But because actually, if you think about it, going back to what we talked about at the beginning, the framers brilliantly not only established this quality control mechanism in the form of Senate ratification with a very high bar on any of these international agreements, they limited the powers of the federal government. It actually does not have the power over health policy. You never know it by the way they behave, but that is not one of the enumerated powers.
That's
so this is now a state's rights issue too. Your governor, your attorney general, your state legislators all need to be asked, what are you going to do about this? Because it's their power that is being not just infringed upon, it is being surrendered.
That's where I was going to go. I want to talk about urge people to sign, go to Sovereignty Coalition and sign that and follow the whole process. But even if this were to go through in the next 60 days and you know, America shows up at the World Health Meeting and says, yep, we're on board and the whole world's on board, we would have many avenues as American citizens, regardless of what these people negotiate on America's behalf, to say we are not complying. One is the states' rights issue you mentioned. I would think that there'd be, in the red states especially, maybe even the blue states, there would be governors and attorneys general and just the legislature saying, you're not going to make a deal in Washington that tells our citizens here in Texas whether a pandemic exists, whether you have to go on lockdown, whether you have to wear a mask, whether you have to get a jab. That is just, it's the obvious surrender of our sovereignty, but it's a surrender of our rights as states. The federal government doesn't do this. And I don't want this to be signed. I don't want that to happen in 60 days. I think the larger picture is it will help wake up more people, help more people recognize how radical America's left is and how they really are about the business of surrendering America to the international globalist agenda. I mean, that's what they're doing. I think 100%. I don't want it to happen, but I think it would wake more people up.
All other things being equal, it is going to happen. That is the plan. You will not know about it. There will not be a debate about it. You will not have an opportunity to assent to them doing it. They will simply do it. And then they will spring it upon all of us. That's the plan. And to your point, Debbie, we may not be able to stop it from happening between now and, 60 days on. But what we can absolutely positively do is create conditions under which it will not apply to us.
Will not be enforced.
We will not surrender to it. And as to your point, just a day or so ago, as we're speaking, the Senate of the state of Louisiana voted 37-0 for some very sweeping legislation saying we're not going to be bound by these guys.
They preemptively did that.
They have already done it. It's the beginning. So look, this is up to us. And honestly, as you were just saying, I am hopeful because I really believe, as with Panama Canal Treaty 1.0, we can rebirth the movement that is standing for freedom in this country.
Yep.
We can find new leadership for that movement, which is in short supply. And I believe we can finally start holding accountable people who are betraying our country. And that is not a term I'm using lightly. It is treason. Full stop. And it must be stopped.
Fully. Yeah. Yep. I want to talk about Sovereignty Coalition in 1 second. The other thing is, though, even if this were to occur, I would imagine, because there are many people who don't comprehend it, that even at the federal level, even if the deal was entered, you could get people in the Senate to say, wait a minute, we never agreed to that. It's not binding. Even if it's just a resolution of the Senate that says, we're not bound by this. I don't know why they're signing on, but we're not doing it. A House and Senate resolution just denouncing it. I mean, just set up the stage to saying none of us are complying, and ultimately could make its way to the Supreme Court, whether this exceeded the president's jurisdiction, the executive branch jurisdiction. And I think the Supreme Court would come down on the side, of course it did. Of course it did. But ahead of myself.
No, but this is what a lot of people say. They say we don't have to worry about this because the Senate will prevent it and the Supreme Court will if they don't. I'm here to tell you that will not be the case if we don't make it the case. Things stand right now, and the problem with the court, I don't need to tell you, the problem with the court is if it gets around to it. It may take years. And we can't live under this for years.
Right.
Period.
Okay, let's just run through a few specific things that should cause the average Joe to say why they should take the time and effort to sign the Sovereignty Coalition statement, declaration. They should contact their senators or House members to say, wake up, get on board, say no, you know, make noise about this. But in the average Joe's life, so you think, we think in America today, or actually I will say, because COVID came along, many people for the first time thought about, can the federal government really do that? Can our even state government really do that? It caused people to say, who has sovereignty over my health? So there was a lot of that already. And that was
the point. Nothing I've shared with you is speculative. We've seen this movie, ladies and gentlemen. This is the playbook of the World Health Organization and its masters. And just in terms of what the average Joe has on the line here, think no further than you're sitting in your doctor's office, like Meryl Nass's patients were. And you have reason to believe that if you follow the guidelines that have been established by Tedros Ghebreyesus, you will die with an intubator in your throat in a hospital. Needlessly. And your doctor, under those circumstances, will actually not even be allowed to tell you that there's an alternative, let alone prescribe it for you. Because Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus will be sitting right next to him or her and saying, no, that's not permissible. And not only that, but as Meryl Nass said to me earlier today on our television show, there will be punishments for any medical practitioner who defies the World Health Organization. They will be subject to that censorship. They, in places like France, they're going to go to jail. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens here in due course. And the point is, it doesn't have to happen if we simply say no. And I think this can be an incredibly, as you were suggesting, Debbie, transformative moment for our country.
For our country. You know, years ago, and I don't know when to place it, 20 or more, actually, even during George Bush 1's presidency, people on the right started talking about the concern about globalism. And I will confess, I was one of them. People said, oh, come on now. You know, America's never going to go in that direction. They talked about globalism, surrendering our sovereignty in various issues, becoming bound by United Nations treaties and other things that we really didn't mean to be involved in. And I always thought it was a little bit of a tin hat concern. And now, if you didn't grasp it until this very moment, now that you see all the concern about globalism, what the World Economic Forum is doing, which very recently had a conversation with a young person who said, what do I care what the World Economic Forum thinks about anything? Why are you worried? I mean, it just is not a comprehension. There is not sufficient comprehension in America that people in our own government would agree that the World Health or World Economic Forum can be in charge, that the UN can be in charge, that the World Health Organization can be in charge. There hasn't been awareness that the globalism thing really means your government's not in charge anymore, and you can't vote out bad guys like we could in the past, bring in the right people you want, change policy. That notion of globalism really is to substitute international control for the nation state, for our American sovereignty.
Global governance. I mean,
yes,
that's what
governance.
They're calling it. It's
I'm
a clue.
Telling you,
but Debbie, here's the thing. I mean, everything you just said is true as far as it goes. Unfortunately, it's actually worse than that, in that it is our government that is driving agenda. There, I don't get into all the weeds on this, but one of the two treaties, which they think they'll get through because who can really object to them just amending existing international health regulations? Right? And that shouldn't rise to the level where it's a treaty and the Senate has to involve itself. So they think they're just going to blow that through. Never mind that in 100 places, the amendments change the word may to the word shall, which is, as Mark Twain used to say, the difference between lightning and lightning bugs. It's compulsory as amended. But I believe of the 300 amendments, the vast majority of them have been offered by the United States government. So we're driving this train.
If we pulled it back
from it, I think the thing would come to a screeching halt.
That is what I was saying, though, which is people didn't think it was real, and now they're seeing it is our government doing it. And I think that will help a lot of people who thought it was kind of a tin hat theory to realize it's our own government. It is the current administration. Mm-hmm. It is the actual people who we elected, or we didn't really elect this administration. We leave that aside. It's our government doing it. So very quickly, you would think the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, these organizations that have authority in Washington, who we, through our tax dollars, pay and fund, they are not, they are apparently utterly on board with 100%. All of this.
Look, they were on board in the pandemic.
Well, that's true.
It was those guys who said we need to do what the World Health Organization says we must do. It was Tony Fauci, it was Deborah Birx, it was all of those characters who, and Meryl Nass made this point to me earlier today, we had a pandemic response on the books. And it didn't involve any of that China model. But we were told that we had to supplant that with the China model, and we saluted smartly and did it. And again, going back to what does this mean for the individual person? It means you can't go to church. It means you can't travel. It means you can't have your kids go to school. I mean, it means everything that you experience personally. I'm not making this up. You've lived it, folks. And if you don't want to live it permanently, or more to the point, probably die early on as a result of all this, you need to stand up now. And this is the key point. I personally believe that if this issue is framed properly as a choice between sovereign America under our Constitution, and by the way, it does bear repeating, every single member of Congress, every single governor, every single state legislator, every single official down to dog catcher, I believe, has at one point or another sworn an oath to support and defend the Constitution. This is a deal breaker. That's not consistent with their oath to be surrendering our sovereignty. But when you put the issue this way, who's in favor of having the sovereign authority of the United States remain pursuant to our Constitution? And who is in favor of turning it over to this Tedros Ghebreyesus?
To the CCP.
I don't think that's even a 80-20 question. It just has to be framed. We need a decision. We need it to be a voting decision. And I'm just going to make a quick aside. When I was a kid, Ronald Reagan went to the American people and sought a mandate for a course correction in the policy of the United States government. It didn't have to do with health policy at that time. It had to do with national survival. Were we going to continue to try to appease our mortal enemies, the Soviet Union and its evil empire? He went to the American people for a mandate to take a different direction, which was we win, they lose. He got that mandate and he followed up on it. And that's the kind of thing that came out of that Panama Canal fight. It's the kind of thing we need now. And I believe if it is in fact embraced by Donald Trump and Republicans all up and down the tape and some Democrats, mark my word, we're going to have this course correction that we need urgently at this moment. It may not come before May, but I believe it will come before November. And either way, we need to make sure we are not subject to this imperiousness by Tedros Ghebreyesus and all that will flow from it, because we know what that looks like based upon his performance in the pandemic.
We absolutely do. I was going to ask you, is President Trump onto this issue?
President Trump has said when he was in office, he was going to get out of the World Health Organization. He set that in motion. Joe Biden reversed it as one of his first acts in office. President Trump has said on the campaign trail, he is going to get us out of the World Health Office when he's back in the White House. He has not to this point made it part of his standard stump speech. I'm told, between us folks, that he actually had it in the speech that he was to deliver in Dayton, Ohio a couple of weeks ago. And as you may know, if you watch that speech, the teleprompters didn't work. And I think he kept trying to get back to it, because he knew there was stuff in there that he didn't have internalized just yet that he was supposed to say, and he didn't on that occasion, but I'm confident he will soon.
Oh, it would be a game changer for many people.
100%.
I keep drilling on this point about what difference it makes to people, and I just want to draw the example. If you're a parent and you go to and you love your family doctor, been to him, you know, love the treatment of your children, your whole family, and you go there and you say, hey, whatever your issue is with some then pandemic or other challenge, and you know you trust the doctor and he knows what he wants you to do, and he would say X, Y, Z, but he'd have to say to you, we have no power to do that. I would like to prescribe X. I think that's all needed.
He wouldn't even be allowed to say that.
He couldn't even say it.
He couldn't say that.
Which is where we are now. By the way,
he couldn't tell you that there are other options that would actually serve you better. That
correct.
Would be or malinformation. And there will be a censorship mechanism put in place as a result of this treaty.
Which I gotta tell you, I had Dr. Simone Gold on my show on Tuesday. And if you didn't see a show on Tuesday, I brought her to Texas. She was fabulous. But one thing she made was, the California Medical Board moved to take her license away because she was prescribing the things that everyone now knows worked, ivermectin, all those other things, during the time we didn't even have the vaccine yet, and that's what they were charging her for and trying to take her license away. So they went to trial, and she was making the point that in other cases, medical boards go after doctors for, you know, negligence or for, you know, abuse of patients, something physically obviously wrong. She said it's the first case she knew of. They went after a doctor to say, you can't say that. Even you can't say what you think on a medical issue. And she won. She took the California Medical Board they took her to court, and the court came down 100% on her side and shut down the California Medical Board. But it's an example of people in authority thinking, we can tell you what to say. The Biden administration did it early on. It was within 8 weeks of taking office. They said, you certainly weren't allowed to talk about election being stolen. That way you were threatened, you might be a domestic terrorist, and you definitely could not talk about, as COVID came along, you can't talk about the danger of the vaccines. This temptation of the tyrant mindset to shut people down is what you're seeing in spades on this. And so back to the point about the doctor, he couldn't even say anything. Nobody in this country would want their doctor to feel that way. So the idea is to get on board. Now tell them quickly again, okay, we only have 13 minutes and we have four other topics. So quickly, Sovereignty Coalition, tell them quickly, go to sovereigntycoalition.com.
.org.
Sovereigntycoalition.org. Everybody do it. I did it. Sign on and just send your message, and they help you communicate with your elected officials to say, get on board and shut this down. And the numbers, I'm telling you, tsunami hitting Washington. If you're a happy senator who's just kind of tuning this out, or House member, but you start to get just droves of communications from your own voters, you're going to wake up. You're going to go, wait a minute, what are they all talking about?
Let me just give you an example. When that legislation was passed in the state Senate of Louisiana, a report about it had 2 million hits on it. 2 million hits. There is interest in this, trust me. And the more we learn, the more interest there will be, and the more that will translate into political impact. And that's what's needed now.
Absolutely. Okay, in these remaining minutes, I wanted to hit UN and Israel. Obviously, you can just tell the story. You know, America failed to stand up for Israel at the UN. Much quick, tell the story they did.
Joe Biden, from his first days in office, sought to undermine the state of Israel, both with respect to getting rid of Benjamin Netanyahu. This was not just a recent thing. This has been going on for months, for years now. And he has sought to lift up the Palestinians. He has sought to appease the others in that cohort of Iranian-backed terrorist entities. And I think at this point, there's no getting around it. He's actually trying to bring about the destruction of the state of Israel.
Of course he is. Of course he is.
And let me just give you one quick example of how this is going to work. As you may know, the United States Army has been charged with taking what I've been told is somewhere between a third and half of its capability to put in place a temporary port. Something that might prove actually pretty important if there's a war in the Pacific, into a temporary, but that means permanent, emplacement in Gaza. What does that mean? That means that there will be a means of bringing in material as well as food and arms, I think, directly to Hamas. But worse than that, folks, and worse even than the prospect that in addition to what they're going to bring in, that will also be used as a vehicle for getting out probably large numbers of jihadists who will be brought to this country without anybody's knowledge, as the administration has brought some 325,000 illegal aliens in, bringing them by air just because they sign on to the so-called CPB1 app. But beyond all of that, Samantha Power, who is the radical pro-Palestinian anti-Semite, anti-American leader of the USAID, the Agency for International Development, has been entrusted with deciding who's going to manage this port. And her decision is that it's going to be the nation of Qatar and a Qatari company called Al Hizri that is owned by Hamas. Now, it doesn't get much clearer than that. This is about saving Hamas and destroying the nation of Israel.
So, yeah, I was going to say that you actually, I think this is your piece, the Save Hamas resolution, the UN, I mean, America could have stopped it. We just don't stand up for Israel. And I think, I know that the left always tries to say, we love Israel. We always are our favorite ally ever.
No, they don't. Not anymore.
They don't even say that?
No, not the left. I mean, there are still people who profess to be centrist Democrats who say it. But Chuck Schumer, for example, doesn't.
Oh, yeah, Chuck Schumer. Oh, what he had, I won't go there. I meant to also comment back to the World Health Organization. I saw you were on a CPAC panel. I can't believe I would have gone to CPAC. I printed out the whole thing and read it. Anyway.
We do these things for your entertainment. I don't know why you don't come.
I know. But on a very serious note, that was really great. I mean, you are just on a mission to make sure conservatives who are activists enough to go to CPAC, they understand these issues.
Well, and there's a perfect example. Thanks to particularly Bill Walton, a mutual friend of ours, who is now the vice chairman of the Conservative Political Action Coalition, was instrumental in working with Matt Schlapp and Mercy Schlapp to get the CPAC board to endorse the fight against globalism in the form of this World Health Organization as a priority for CPAC going forward. They're all in on
that
this.
That is fabulous.
It's a sign of the progress that we're making.
That's a long road. Big change they've made over the years. Let's just say that. Okay, which is great. Great. Okay, so the last few minutes we have a microphone. I do believe you're able to ask questions. So while you're thinking of your question and raise your hand and talk right in the microphone, very quickly, this cargo ship that hit the Key Bridge. What did you have a take on that? If there's anything nefarious or just not?
I thought it was probably a little nefarious that the FBI within 4 hours said, there's nothing to see here, folks. The investigation is concluded. Beyond that, I think there's going to be plenty to see here. I'm hearing reports, as I'm sure you all are, that people find very suspicious the fact that the power went out within a minute or two of leaving the port. And the GPS might have been jammed. There may have been cyber attacks on the generators and so on. Who knows? All I'm going to tell you is what we do know is we're going to find more attacks on our critical infrastructure. For sure.
Yeah, and when you parallel that with, I've seen people posting, but you parallel all the, or consider it along with things that have been happening in the last couple of years, just the food supply, the supply chain, just breakdown of so many things that we rely on, and that actually is a very symbolic bridge. We used to live in that area, so very symbolic bridge.
Yeah, and also one interesting data point, there have been fires in, I think, last count, 30 food production facilities in this country. Two of them actually had planes crash into them. Do you remember crashing into anything else recently, or in recent memory at least?
Yeah.
Not an accident, comrade, I would suggest.
Yeah. Okay, we have one question. There you go.
And no time for it.
Hi, Mr. Gaffney. It's good to see you. The question, it seems that 2 years ago, there was another issue that was going up to vote for the WHO. And we were all alarmed and concerned, and it didn't pass. And it seems that there were other countries that voted against it. And I was wondering if you would throw that in to your overall narrative.
Sure.
Of that we have foreign countries all over the world that realize that their sovereignty is at risk too.
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I think it was last year. They were going to try to run this operation last year. And a bunch of African countries, and actually, I think Iran and Russia objected. I think the reason wasn't that they were concerned about their sovereignty as much as it was that they weren't getting enough in the redistribution of wealth that this is also supposed to feature, and intellectual property and other things, by the way. But it does show that if them nations do stand up, it can at least buy time. And I think that's what we need to be focused on at the moment. It's actually, this is an important thing to know. Under the rules of the World Health Organization itself, they are not allowed to have a vote on something that has not been made part of the public agenda 4 months prior to the vote. Well, that would have been back in January for this one coming up. So our view is we need to delay this exercise. Delay it preferably to a new presidency where it will fall apart, I think, especially if this kind of debate we're talking about does take place. And course correction is authorized by the American people.
Thanks for being here, Frank. I want you to back up just a minute to what you said a few minutes ago about even if it doesn't get solved by May, that it could be solved if Trump comes into office. What do you mean by that? He could undo it? Is that what you're saying?
I think what will happen if, and I don't think this is ideal, frankly, because the building blocks that I'm talking about, the building blocks for repression, the digital gulag, the censorship
right.
mechanism, and the biowarfare proliferation operation are all going to be put in place once this thing is done in May. So unraveling that, or at least making sure that we're not impacted by it, is going to be very challenging. And I think we need to make sure that this thing is delayed. That's the first rule of the
game. So that's what we need to work for, is delaying
it. Also going to be engaged in the, you know, quality control that it's supposed to under our Constitution.
Well, and Debbie, you said a while ago that even if it went into place, that maybe that conservative red state governors could. But I hope you don't think that we have a governor that would take a stand. I mean, I don't think so.
Yes, I think there are more, we need red state conservative governors, and probably ours would not take the lead in this kind of thing, but
right.
our attorney general would. And I
True.
Think the attorney general could just challenge this it would have to be actually that there was an attempt to enforce it within the state, and the attorney general just making the challenge at that point, just saying this is not law
Good
in our state,
point.
And we're not doing it. But yes, we would need a really strong governor, and we do have a strong attorney general.
Yeah.
And he's actually indicated that he's very much opposed to this, by the way.
Our attorney general?
Excuse me. Okay. We would expect nothing less.
Okay. Well, thank you, Frank. Your words are always from Sinai. As far as I'm concerned, I appreciate everything that you say and expose to us. Israel has always been the barometer for the world, in my opinion, and many, and her fate is the fate of all freedom-loving countries, period. Easter is upon this world. How are the clergy relaying this information that you're helping us with?
Well, I think not enough have become engaged. Honestly, as best I can tell, on either the Israel front or the World Health Organization front, I do know people, and you do too, Debbie, who are working tirelessly to try to equip pastors and priests with this kind of information.
Yeah.
And I praise God that they're doing that. We just need that now to be translated, especially in this election season. And you know, there's still a lot of concern about violating the Johnson Amendment by speaking from the pulpit about these kinds of policy issues and political issues. I'm with those who say, rubbish. This nation was born of pastors who took off the black robes and wore
Went
their military
war.
Uniform to war. And I'm not calling for war, obviously, but I am calling for their leadership of their flocks.
Frank Gaffney, this happens every time. We need a two-hour show.
You do.
Yeah, I do need a two-hour show.
Anybody want a two-hour show?
Yeah. Thank you very much. If you quickly tell, I did not, in introducing you, talk about your host of Secure Freedom Radio. Can you tell people how to find that?
You won't find that, because it's now called Securing America.
Securing America. Okay, how about that?
And it's actually a radio show on the American Family Radio Network, also in the Salem Media outlet in Washington. It's also a television program on the Real America's Voice Network, and you can find it there every day, just about. And you can find all of it easily at securingamerica@substack.com.
securingamericasubstack.com. Honestly, if I had nothing, if I could clone myself, one of me could just watch your videos all the time, because
you get
great guests all the time. I mean, very substantive discussions, serious issues, very timely. They're wonderful. I mean, they're just extraordinary presentations on issues and really informed people, and it's a wonderful public service you do.
Well, it's a privilege.
Yeah, well,
it's also cheaper than therapy.
Yes, it is. Cheaper than
therapy. As you may have noticed.
There you go. So I will say, first of all, I want to thank you again for joining me today. Thank you for coming in studio. It's just great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Debbie.
And in response to the last question, I was going to chime in briefly about how much pastors do and don't speak up. This past week, or just a couple nights ago, my husband and I went to an amazing presentation with Eric Metaxas, and it was he has a book out, Letter to the American Church, which is a fabulous book, is now a film, and wasn't planning on doing this, but we watched the film two nights ago at someone's home. It was extraordinary film, and then he was there to answer questions, and really there is a movement with fire behind it among many Christian pastors and just Christian leaders, saying the church has to be part of the solution on countless issues. He happened to focus on transgendering small children and schools taking charge of your children's education and such, and many other issues. But these are issues too. Christian churches should be speaking up. It's part of loving your neighbor is to protect your neighbor, and that means protect their sovereignty, protect their healthcare freedom. There's a wonderful role for everyone to play, because people come up to me after speeches and shows and say, what more can I do? Just speaking up in your church and saying, hey, pastor, why aren't you talking about the fact that they're about to take away our healthcare freedom? Why aren't you talking about the fact that the World Health Organization is a threat and they're anti-American? Why aren't you telling us? Those kind of things, churches can still preach the gospel, which I obviously want them to do, but on this Easter Sunday, and most people are going to church, be part of the voice that says, I want you to talk more seriously and more in depth about the issues facing this country. The pastors, large Christian churches, have a wonderful role to play, and so I urge you to do that. I wasn't planning on that plug. Amen. Amen. That's right. And Eric Metaxas' book. And actually, you know what else? You can watch his film for free. The film is, the book is called Letter to the American Church, as is the film. I don't remember the website, but you can find it. You can download it and play it. Invite in your neighbors and play it. It's a really very powerful message, essentially paralleling the fall of Germany during prior to World War II, prior to Hitler, during Hitler's rise to power, and how churches, very few spoke up, a few did, and how had they been more bold, maybe things, the course of history would have been changed, would have stopped Hitler's sooner. Just great film, urge you to do that. So we're now past time, so I want to thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. The show is called America Can We Talk. The website is americacanwetalk.org. Every blog post, an interview and show we've done is right there, so please check it out there. I urge you to go to that website. Also, follow us on Twitter at Debbie Can We Talk. Follow us, share the show. The show grows when you share it, so I'd love to have you do that. I do the show to speak truth about America, because America matters. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you.
Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you hear